This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
All eyes are on Ohio, and the power of our votes has never mattered more for shaping the future of our nation and stopping radical Bernie Moreno's extremist agenda from rolling back our rights. Our civil rights are on the line. Our reproductive rights are on the line. Our voting rights are on the line. Senator Sherrod Brown believes in our shared freedoms, our American values, and our right to the American dream. Not just for some of us, for all of us. That's why he's fought back against rising costs, capping the price of insulin, and introducing laws to crack down on predatory landlords jacking up rents in Black neighborhoods. This November, let's stand with Sherrod Brown, a proven leader who has always put us first. Every single vote will matter this election. Vote to re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
You're listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, now part of the Chairshot Radio Network, on thechairshot.com. Remember, always use your head.
You look like a dude who should be pumping my fucking gas.
This isn't doing it for me. I'm not getting enjoyment out of this.
He was a before the bell rings all-star.
All right, everybody. It is Thursday night, October 10th, 2024. You are listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, part of the Chairshot Radio Network, to be found on thechairshot.com, where we remind you and encourage you to always use your head. I'm going to go around the room and introduce this cast of characters like I always do. I'm going to start with myself from the pod cave, from Florida, with the backdrop of Hurricane Milton. I am the man with the award-winning and holy beard DJ. Going to talk to you guys in a minute about Hurricane Milton, but I want to go around and introduce the guys again, starting with from the Rob the Genius podcast. He is the minister of truth, the father of facts and figures, the deacon of data, the official shoot bearer of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. He is Ray Cash's daddy and the man with the golden shovel. Rob, sir, how you doing, bud?
Good to be back. It's good. Hey, good to have you back. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thing that's going on this week.
Yeah, it's been chaotic. I'll talk to you guys about that in a minute. But first, the resident high flyer of the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. He hails from the Purple Haze in Cloud 9. He is Bucky's tag team partner, a man destined to go through a barbershop window. Jason, sir, how are you?
I'm wonderful, and I'm also glad that you did not blow away.
Yeah, I live in Florida, and I'm on the East Coast. Hurricane Milton, I've been watching this thing creep across the Gulf of Mexico over the last 3 or 4 days. It officially made landfall Wednesday night into Thursday morning over near the Tampa area, West Coast. I believe it landed as a Category 3. By the time it got to us, it was a Category 1. We had some sustained winds, you know, in probably around, you know, between 50 and 80 miles an hour with some gusts, maybe a little higher. We had a lot of yard debris. We never lost power, never lost internet. I was a little questionable early on in the week as to whether or not I was even going to be able to do this show because we record on Thursdays, and I knew the worst end of it was going to get us somewhere around Thursday morning. So I told the guys, I was like, you guys may have to do this without me. But we never lost power, never lost internet, never lost any of that. Folks on the West Coast, and oddly enough, a bit south of me in Port St. Lucie, where my ex lives, they had some tornadoes touch down in that area, and unfortunately, there was a lot of damage. There was a lot of loss of life associated with that. So, you know, want to send out, you know, our thoughts and condolences to those people as we struggle to recover from this massive, you know, major storm. Like I said, I haven't really looked at the news, so I don't know how bad the West Coast got beat up. And again, if you're on the West Coast of Florida listening to this, you know, we feel for you, and we're pulling for you. And like I said 2 weeks ago when Helene went through, guys, stay off the road. If you're in the most heavily damaged and the most heavily affected areas, let the crews do their thing. Let the linemen go out and fix the power. Let the emergency crews get to the people that need the help. Don't be out there clogging up the roads. As rude as this sounds, you're in the way. You're impeding progress if you're out there. If you're going out to casually look around your neighborhood, look around your surroundings, I know in the short term, you're going to be without power. It's going to suck. You're going to want to – you have this tendency to want to go out and look at the area and see what's going on. Find a place to huddle that maybe has AC, maybe has electricity. Please resist that as much as possible. Let these people do their jobs. Let them do their thing so that we can get back to some semblance of normal sooner rather than later. And for God's sake, be safe. You know, if you're in a safe place, stay there. If you need help, please find a way to get it to you. Don't put yourself in more harm's way. That's probably the best. Yeah, being that I've probably been through a dozen or more of these things at this point, that's probably the best piece of advice that I can give you is to try and stay close to home. Let these people do their jobs. So let's get out of that. Let's talk wrestling. WWE Bad Blood was this weekend. We got a lot to talk about. Seems like the timeline's a little mixed on how they felt about the show, including some people in our own little podcast network. I'm going to start off this whole segment by saying I thought top to bottom, the show was pretty damn awesome. There were some misfires. There were some issues that we can discuss as we talk about this a little more. But all in all, top to bottom, I enjoyed this show all the way through. Rob, I'm going to start with you. We're just talking about the show and how you felt about it. What were your thoughts?
Overall, I thought it was okay. I'd say okay overall. I mean, not bad, but yeah, I said okay.
Okay. And for starters, I want to put over Rob's shirt. Rob's got a Sid Vicious shirt. Is this new?
I got a couple weeks ago.
That is excellent. I love it. Master and ruler of the world. I love it. I got to put that shirt over. That is incredible.
I think it's on the WWE shop too. So
I might have to go look for that then. Jason, sir, your thoughts on just the show. We'll get into the card in a minute.
I had a great time. It felt, despite the opening match and, you know, the closing match, it felt like a, you know, side road pay-per-view. It felt like a B pay-per-view, which that, you know, it's kind of supposed to be. But I had a blast. So, and that's the, at the end of the day, that's what we're going for.
Yeah. I think, like I said, there was a little misfires, you know, some production issues, some timing issues that we're going to discuss here in a few minutes. But all in all, top to bottom, I thought just about everybody delivered. There were some really good moments throughout the whole thing in just about every match that we're going to get into. But let's take it match by match. Jason, as customary on this show, is going to take over and run the card.
All right, so kicking off the show, we don't need to talk about that. So Nia Jax and Bayley.
Hang on a minute. What? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You didn't. You want to skip over the single greatest moment of the entire night?
The match of the year, which I'm not working here. That's I believe that.
Yeah, this is come on, Jason. This is a match of the year candidate, and it's pretty high up on the list.
I know it is. It is a match of the year candidate.
Jason got his little heart broken this weekend.
I hate it here. So, CM Punk and Drew McIntyre faced off in Hell in a Cell, and you know the bad guy won. So everybody had a good time, I guess. But no, the match itself, guys, was exactly what we thought it was going to be. It was a wrestling match in a Hell in a Cell. Like, it's exactly what, you know, an old school cage match, Hell in a Cell, was supposed to feel like. It got brutal, it got bloody, and they hit basically every spot that you could have hit, and they didn't do anything stupid. So, yeah, hats off. You know, I don't know if I would have had Punk win, but I don't know.
Jason, not Booker of the Year.
You're as bad as me, man. Okay.
Listen, it's all. I'm gonna go to the United Center and I'm gonna throw up the one this weekend. So it's always fuck that guy up. Fuck CM Punk over here.
Well, and to be fair,
for new listeners, let's remind everyone who gave CM Punk the cleanest of new sheets, whatever you want to call it, turned over that new leaf, gave the old benefit of the doubt, extended the olive branch. Who was that on this podcast?
That was you.
When he returned,
returned to wrestling
in AEW.
That was you.
Thank you. And then he immediately shit on it three months later. So, no. I'm glad this guy's having a great time and, you know, dotting all the T's and crossing all the I's and having the kumbaya experience and whatnot. But no, dude. But I do think it's very clear, very funny that I do need to point out again that CM Punk on television on Monday Night Raw acknowledged the tribal chief, Roman Reigns.
You know what else he did? He thanked you personally, Jason. He thanked you. He thanked his haters. He thanked his haters, and that was you personally. In my head, he had you personally in mind when he did that.
Yeah. Oh, I know. He did. Good old Phil. Thanks for the shout-out, Phil.
Rob, go ahead.
Okay. Okay. I think for me, this is a match of the year. And, I mean, they did everything almost exactly the way I wanted them to do it. They used the table, but they didn't stack up 10 tables. They didn't stack up a bunch of chairs. They bled a lot more than I thought they were going to. I figured they would do something on that end, but man.
Well, Drew's injury ended up being a shoot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm surprised you didn't get a chance. You didn't take your opportunity to get at Punk for being unsafe there, Jason. Shoot, bust.
Yeah, well. You know what? I don't know. Drew probably told him to do it.
I'll see. But anyway.
What, 16 staples?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah, I'm not gonna do the accent, but he probably was like, "Just gig me, brother."
Yeah. And so, man, yeah, I mean, like they did everything almost perfect. I mean, and just from the way, you know, from the way they were hitting each other, and then, you know, when they brought the table in the ring and ripped the legs off the table and just used it as a weapon, and you know, when they got busted open, it was at the right spot and after the right thing. And I mean, and then using the little beads instead of, you know, thumbtacks or whatever was, you know, absolutely perfect given the history of it, you know, and all. And then when he did the chain assisted go to sleep, that was the end of the match. He didn't kick out and go for 10 more minutes after that.
Right.
And then, you know, even like the whole bit after the match where, you know, he could barely walk to the back and they had to come give him the oxygen and everything. It's like, I mean, but after that's the kind of condition he would be in. If you fought somebody like that for a half hour.
Yeah, and you're old as hell and broken down.
And work with children.
Yeah, like you would not be able to just, you know, walk to the back like nothing was wrong. And then, like, he was even walking, you know, gingerly on Raw Monday night and still selling it. And that's, I mean, like, all of that stuff is so important because, you know, too many times with these type of matches, they do all this stuff. And then, you know, and then once the bell rings, it's like, okay, we're done, you know. And just so, I mean, like everything was just done so spot on. And honestly, I did not think that Punk had this kind of match in him. And you know, their first two matches were, you know, they were fine, but, Yeah, I didn't think he had this. I don't to do
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I got to admit, too, because exactly what you said, Rob. I mean, obviously, I'm pessimistic when it comes to the guy. But, you know, from the first two matches, if you had told me they put on a match of the year candidate, I thought it was going to be good. But if you had told me they were putting on a match of the year candidate, I don't know if I would have believed you. But
this almost felt like 2013 Punk again. Like, yeah. Obviously the guy's, you know, closer to 50 than 40 now, I think. But, yeah, it's still, it felt like the whole, him in the ring, his movements, his interactions with Drew. I felt like I was watching 2013 CM Punk again.
Yeah.
I know, Jason, it pains you to say that.
Anyway, so the next match.
Well, hang on now. I don't want to get out of this without giving Drew McIntyre his flowers, because we're sitting here, yeah. We're blowing up Punk and all this other stuff, and that's great. The guy had an amazing match. There was another guy in that match. His name was Drew McIntyre, and that guy put the work boots on. Not that he doesn't usually anyway. Drew McIntyre's a workhorse, but he was absolutely special on Saturday night in that match. He took some crazy bumps. He took that toolbox right to the head, split himself wide open, yeah. Required like a dozen or more staples just to close the wound, was leaking like a sieve all over the place, and then that horrific stairs bump at the end to finish the match. Like, oh. I think as much as the gash in the head from the toolbox kind of had me like queasy, when he took that bump on the corner of the stairs, I audibly screamed when that happened. I'm sure Tina was like in the bedroom going, what the hell is he watching out there? So I don't want to get out of this discussion without saying, you know, giving Drew McIntyre his flowers, because like I said, he was the other guy in the match of the year, for my money, the match of the year, and he was just as good as the other half of that match.
Yeah, he was. We gotta keep it real. He, you know, dude, that guy has been putting on a show for
Drew McIntyre quite a while.
This heel run, man.
Almost 3 years. Like, he really has.
I really hate, you know, that we, you know, the solution when a baby face is just sputtering is now, you know, is always just turn him heel. But I hate the fact that we had two great recent examples with Drew and Roman. Because if you did or didn't like whatever Drew or Roman were doing when they were baby faces, like the turn both of them made and how they got the entire crowd with them or against them.
Well, Drew tapped into something deeper. Like the baby face run during the pandemic, I was here for. I enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it. He had a great feud with Randy Orton. There was a lot of good stuff there. He traded back and forth with Bobby Lashley. They had a great feud. But he's really tapped into something deeper in the last 10 months, and it's been incredible.
Yeah, man. Here's the best. So, can we move on?
We can move on now, Jason. Yes.
Yes.
Ah, thank you. All right. So, hang on. I had to be sure I was getting the title right, because God forbid, you know, I'm not going to call them by their show.
Why not?
The WWE Women's Championship was contested. Nia Jax was taking on Bayley, and Nia Jax successfully defended her title, and there was a moment of a babe will she won't she cash in with Tiffy, but that, you know, evaporated quickly. But I had fun. And it moved that story along with Tiffany. So hey, hats off, Rob.
I found myself a lot. There were people. Some of the online reviewer people were like, it's totally shit on this match. I mean, there were like one or two kind of spots that were just bad. It went bad. But other than that, I understand, the Hurricane Rana thing just don't. I mean, you know, you pray for trying, but Now that you tried it, just don't.
Don't ever do that again.
Yeah. But yep. Other than that, I mean, and look, I thought, you know, they had a good story going in that match. And for me now, the moment of that match was when Nia did the Undertaker sit up thing. The Undertaker.
That was great.
Yeah, that was incredible. She
was thinking about catching the briefcase, and Nia, she just set up like the Undertaker. That to be that
when Nia like is on or just wants to have fun, dude, there's not many better.
Yeah,
she's
incredible. She's never going to be the technical whatever, fine, but like again, you need.
But to be fair to her, she's also moved past like. Sorry, this might be unkind, but in the beginning, when I first saw her on the main roster, I would describe her moveset as thud. She's moved way past that now. Like, she's booming, folks. Like, it's awesome.
Well, the first minute or two of that match was pretty fast-paced, especially for a Nia Jax match, who... Nia, as her character, is a bit more methodical, a bit slower, slow it down a little bit. And there was actually a moment or two where there was a little bit of chain wrestling. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, okay, this is cool. And, you know, like Rob said, there were obviously a couple spots where things fell apart, but there were also some spots that were really, really good. There was some good stuff on the outside. Bailey took a hellacious bump on the stairs. I think Nia hit her with like a power bomb or something on the stairs. So there was some really good work in here that kind of gets muddied because there were a couple of really ugly spots.
And hey, credit to them for swinging for the fences.
Yeah, here's the other thing. Like, I mean, because like a lot of the online review people are still not very, we're unfair to her actually because. Yeah, you know, you read some reviews of her matches, and then they literally start off like, oh boy, Nia Jax match. This probably isn't going
to
be very good.
We don't listen to these people, Rob. The people come to us.
Yeah, the hatred for her is already baked in.
Yeah,
when you read reviews then of her matches, it absolutely is, and you just kind of disregard it at this point. I thought, again, I had a much higher opinion of it than a lot of people. So.
Okay.
Man, and the one thing is, this version of Nia Jax would be a hoot on one of the bloodlines.
Yeah.
So, just let her fucking destroy the Tongans one night. Let her destroy the gorillas. That would be, I would pop to the moon. So anything else on this match, gentlemen?
I'm good.
Yeah.
Perfect. Nope. So next up, we had a good old fashioned grudge match. We had Damian Priest and Finn Balor settling their score, kind of. Rob, well, I'm going to start with you. What did you think of this match?
Actually, this was a, this was my coach. This was my,
DJ, what did you think of this match?
I didn't watch it.
Thought it was an excellent match. I have my issues with the finish. I love Damian Priest. I have collectively with this team, put Damian Priest over to the moon and agreed with strapping the Rocket on him. What the fuck are we doing with Finn Balor? Like, we talked in the pre-show about the Pure Fusion Collective and how if we're going to take them serious as a threat, they've got to win something. A goddamn at some point, Finn Balor's got to win something. And don't hand me, well, he's the current tag team champion holder because that don't mean dick right now. They're not defending those belts. That tag team division is stagnant because the belts are a prop for whatever faction is hot at the time. And like I said, I'm a big Finn Balor fan. I've been ride or die with this guy since his NXT days. If I'm going to believe that he is a threat, that guy has got to win something. We got it. And again, like we talked about I think it was Shayna Baszler. She just recently re-signed. Finn Balor just re-signed a deal with WWE. So personally, he's probably not unhappy with his position, not unhappy with his booking, not unhappy with the company. But me as a fan, I'm looking at this like, what are we doing with this guy? Like, he's in his early 40s now. If we're going to pull the trigger here and have him be any type of credible threat, we've got to do it sooner than later. And I hate being like that because I really, really enjoyed this match. Like, and I think I said that, you know, publicly on Twitter. I'm like, these guys are having a hell of a match here. Like, it was crisp. It was smooth. The story was really good. And then the fuckery happened at the end with the rest of the Judgment Day. You know, Big Head comes out. Carlito comes out. And, you know, we've got a whole brouhaha. And Damian Priest sneaks away with another
baked in. Wasn't that kind of baked in with the pie, though?
It was. And you knew it was coming. But I was like, can they come out and at least for once the shenanigans be effective? Because I feel like this is like the third or tenth time that they've come out and the shenanigans, and somehow or another they still end up losing. Like, it's okay at this point for Damian Priest to take a loss to Finn Balor.
So I saw the finish, and yeah, so I'm not a big fan of the Superman, Superwoman beat up the whole faction and win the match ending. I remember a few years ago when Bianca beat up all three of Damage Control and then just climbed up the ladder and then snapped.
Oh, that was, and I love Bianca, but that was awful.
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, that effectively ended any, you know, Damage Control as a, you know, any type of credible threat for anything.
I mean, unless we're getting to a point where we've reached the end of the road with Judgment Day, and I really feel like we may be there. You know, Priest and Rhea have moved on. I don't even know why the hell Carlito's part of that group. Like, all of a sudden, Carlito was just there one day, and they're like, oh, you're in Judgment Day now. I'm like, that's what it takes to get in Judgment Day? Big Head tried for months, and they wouldn't even let him in. Carlito just walks in the door like, oh, yeah, come on in, you're Judgment Day. Like, what is that?
I think, honestly, I think that's one of those things.
I think in the words of Jim Rhodes, keep getting them checks, young fella.
Oh, I don't hate on Carlito at all. But I feel like this may be a situation where Finn Balor's starting to get a little tired of Judgment Day, and he's going to eventually turn on them and walk away from the whole thing.
It's definitely time for him to stop being a sidekick. Yeah. I mean, I know that, like, you know, the answer's kind of staring us in the face because that's kind of what the story is. But it really is. It's time. He's done everything he needs to do for that Judgment Day story. I would not be so shocked, surprised, or mad at all if he broke up. So, anybody else got any, Rob, anything, last thoughts on this match?
From what I saw was fine. I didn't, like, I missed most of it, so.
All right. So, Rhea Ripley defended her championship. I'm sorry, wait a second.
Hit the brakes. The
Women's World Championship.
The Rhea Ripley defended that. The Raw.
And I'm sorry, Jason.
It's
who's
very
the
easy,
champion?
Guys.
Who's well, the champion, Jason?
The thing is, you're almost insulting your own intelligence, guys. The ones that look like classic belts are the world championships. The ones that look like WWE belts are the WWE championships. There you go. That's it.
Well, it doesn't matter if you get the champion wrong, Jason. Who's the champion?
Liv Morgan, right?
Thank you. Yes.
You said it was Rhea Ripley.
Oh, well, I'm confused because I was going to get the damn title right so much. So yeah, I mean, we saw this one coming a mile away. I had a good time. I'm kind of, maybe it's Judgment Day fatigue and it feels weird because we've been putting them over for so long, but I'm almost ready for everybody to move on. So, but we'll see what happens with these two. Rob?
Okay, I thought they were having a good match. The last 2 minutes were fucking atrocious.
What happened there, man?
Now, we do have to say, because, hold on, we do have to give them a lot of grace here, because Dom did legitimately get stuck in the contraption.
Okay.
So, they did, that it was kind of like, it's kind of like the, you know, when Kevin got stuck to the handcuff in that match with Roman. or Roman got stuck to the handcuff, rather. But yeah, like, so this was legit nothing anyone could do bullshit.
Okay, but
that really threw the curveball into this thing. So okay. I got that out. Go ahead, Rob.
But that being said, just from a creative or booking standpoint, I have the girl beat, but hey, I'm going to go out there and beat up the guy outside the ring.
Go ahead.
I could have pinned the girl in the ring and then gone out there to beat him up.
Yeah.
Right. I could have, cause she was like laid out dead. Okay. So.
But as soon as the match is over, they lower the shark cage and she loses the opportunity.
Okay, but okay, this is like stupid baby face stuff.
It is.
It is, but that's what, you know.
Okay, but no, but she had her pinned in the, she was laid out in the middle of the ring. She could just put her foot on her chest, 1, 2, 3, and Dominic was hanging. He was stuck, so he couldn't have run away. So she could have just pinned her for 3 seconds and then gone out there and beat him up. Because he couldn't go anywhere. But she decided.
The problem was he couldn't go anywhere because he was stuck in the stupid thing. And like, that threw the whole finish off. So she didn't know what to do.
Well, I mean,
they probably like waited to send what's her name out there, or then the whole thing got sent sideways.
And then okay, and then
I'm not arguing that the finish was booty, because it was, but again, extenuating circumstances. And
obviously
he if was Rhea truly has to like make it up as she goes along, sometimes there's a little bit of deer in headlights kind of thing.
But I don't think, okay, the only thing we know that was supposed to happen was, okay, so Raquel was supposed to lay her out and Liv was supposed to pin her.
Right.
And then, but Raquel came out too early and did the thing right in front of the referee, so he had to call the DQ.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, just the whole premise, because look, it's not like she wasn't, obviously, there was some planned bit where she was going to go over there and beat up on Dominic, because he got stuck because he was trying to get out of the cage as part of the match or whatever.
Right. So we don't know where he was supposed to be. For all we know, he was supposed to be in the ring.
Right, but okay, sure. But leaving the ring to go beat, it's dumb. And no, I don't think, unless
but it's also up, why it's she lost. That's the point of the story, Rob. She lost because she let her emotions get the better of her, and she went out to beat up on Dom.
Took her eye off the ball. Like, literally. That's it.
That was the whole point of the story, Rob.
This was so stupidly crafted, okay?
It played out in a janky way because everything was out of order. Because Dom was supposed to be out of the cage.
He was supposed to get out of the cage, okay? He got stuck. He was supposed to get out of the cage. Yes. Okay. And maybe he would have gotten out of the cage.
And we know she's not supposed to win, man. So what do you want her to do?
Okay. Well, no, she wasn't supposed to win. I know that. But this particular way of concocting things was dumb. Okay.
I think it was dumb because everyone had to make it up in those 5 seconds. And I promise we would have done worse.
I got a couple of thoughts.
This was some badly written shit. And maybe if everything went like it was supposed to do, maybe if he didn't get stuck, it would have played out better.
But yeah, as constructed, differently.
But as constructed, okay, it's still just dumb. Okay. This is the first time ever in the history of a shark cage match where the babyface just said, you know what, I have this match won, but I'm going to go over there and beat up on the guy out there.
Because he was supposed to be out of the cage. TJ, talk.
All right. For starters, don't ever, 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 ever do the ref cam again. The ref cam stinks. It just stinks, guys. Hunter, stop. Okay, this is twice you guys have used it, and it stunk out loud both times. Stop using it. Two, I thought Dom was going to Jesus for a minute, man. My God, when he fell again, I audibly gasped out loud watching this show in those first milliseconds where he tumbled out of the cage and then his leg got caught. I was like, oh, fuck, that was cool as shit. They got me. I thought Dom was going to the Ancestors on Saturday night. The finish was terrible. You could see it written all over Raquel's face. The crowd let them know it. Crowd let them know it was terrible. And she's like out there like a deer in a headlight. She's like, what do we do? They just shit all over this. And it's very obvious. And to WWE's credit, they're pivoting quickly and just kind of like, okay, let's move on. I thought the match up until that point was really good. I thought it was the best match they'd had yet. Liv looked incredible. Rhea looked incredible. And I hate that because I hate that the finish is what we're talking about, because I feel like there's a little bit there's one more chapter to this story before we put it to bed. And unfortunately, there's this weird thing tying up the whole thing. So hopefully, you know, as fans are forgetful. And if WWE pivots the right way and moves it in the right direction, we can move on from this. I call back to something somebody said one time, and I hate to put over Vince McMahon, but he was fond of saying they only ever remember the finish. And there is no match on this card on Saturday night this rings more true than this match right here. Because from opening bell up until a point, they had a great match. They really did.
Also, get new finisher, please. Oblivion stinks. It stinks. Okay. Good luck. I'm sorry. Okay.
She can't make it good look good often enough, unfortunately.
And unfortunately, and it's, Rhea's too tall to be doing that.
Exactly. And it's not even a Liv thing. It's just the size of her opponents. It varies, obviously. And then her size is quite small. So
speaking of size, the only other part of this match that kind of pulled me out was, and you guys know me, I'm a Liv Morgan fan. Rob and I have gone rounds over Liv Morgan on this show. Liv Morgan pulling off the Three Amigos just wasn't doing it for me. Like
that's another thing. If you can't get the whole swivel movement when you're doing it, you should not do the move.
Right. Nope.
And there are a lot
of Sasha Banks couldn't pull it off. No, Liv Morgan can't pull it off. Stop doing it.
Yeah, I just.
At least when Dom does it, he looks like he's mocking it.
And that's the thing. He does it as a mockery, so it's not. You know.
It's not egregious.
And he's allowed to do his dad's finisher, dude.
This is true.
Oh, yeah.
But he doesn't have to wear his dad's mullet and his dad's mustache. Yeah. Shave that shit.
Yes, he does.
I can only think of one person who would do Oblivion and they would actually do it well. And this name is going to be might shock you guys. Brock Lesnar.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Brock grabbing you by your face and.
Because he can jump. He has the speed to jump fast enough to get in the air, and he's strong enough to grab somebody's head and yank them back. And he can the speed and the force you need to actually knock somebody out with that move. He's like the one person I can think of who could actually make it look legit.
Yeah.
Right.
I look at this move like, and I don't dislike it like the way you do, but it's very much like the Soul Snatcher. It is very dependent on the person taking the move being exactly where they need to be at exactly the right time. And if they're not where they need to be, the move looks like shit or it looks contrived. And, you know, that's kind of how I see it from my 10,000 foot vantage point.
Yeah, I mean, Oblivion does unfortunately look bad sometimes. I will tell you, Soul Snatcher never looks like shit. It does look very contrived if somebody does it wrong.
Now, it usually looks incredible, but it looks fucking awesome. Yeah, but it's highly dependent on the person taking the move to position themselves
it is.
Where they're supposed to be.
It very much is. So.
You know, honestly, I think she should do it more as like a counter and not her.
Or a setup.
Yeah. Because, I think it would work better if she did it as a counter and not as her regular finisher. Because when she does it as a regular finisher, she's got to stay in there and the other person's got to stay in there and, you know.
I've only seen her do that once on Jada Parker in that ladder match where she literally just hit it. Like, she went from one move, Jada immediately set herself where she needed to be. And it wasn't like we used to, there's a thing we used to call in the business. If you stand there long enough waiting to take a move, they used to call it waiting on the bus. And that was the one time where I've seen Sol Ruka put that on somebody where they didn't look like they were waiting on the bus.
Okay. Any last thoughts on this match, gentlemen?
I'm good.
Yeah. Now, before we get to the last one, we gotta talk about the Triple H Burger King belt presentation.
Okay. Do we have to?
What? I mean,
all right, there's a new championship. WWE champion wrestles the Universal blah, 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 whatever champion at the Jam in the Sand. Thank you, DWI, for the Jam in the Sham reference. Chris Platt, that's a shout out to you. The winner is now the ultimate WWE Universal Master of the Universal champion.
No, he's just the crown jewel champion.
Oh, did I add too many adjectives to that?
A few.
Okay. Yeah. Somebody explained that better than I did because I just shit the bed.
we don't want to be like the multiversal champion because then Darkseid might come to Earth and try to take it from them or something. Right?
Exactly.
All we wanted was a women's mid-card title. That's all we wanted.
It's going to be an Elseworlds bullshit. So if anybody doesn't know, they announced that the WWE Women's Champion and the Women's World Champion will be facing off in a match, as well as the undisputed WWE Champion and the World Heavyweight Champion. They will be facing off in a match against their respective champion, and the winner will be awarded the Crown Jewel Championship and the Crown Jewel Women's Championship. Shout out to the people who said that they were never going to let women wrestle in Saudi Arabia. That was all bullshit, and then WWE was going to collect the check for 10 years and whatnot. I'm not telling you that Saudi Arabia is suddenly paradise on earth or the, you know, a bastion of human freedoms, but na-na-na-na boo-boo, stick your head in doo-doo. Now they're wrestling for a belt that's just over there. So, oh well. Anyway, those championships, I guarantee, I don't care if this was reported, which it was, because any fucking idiot could have come up with this fact, that these championships will be awarded in Saudi Arabia, and then they will never be spoken of again until the next year.
You mean like the one that told you that?
Because that happened with the biggest fucking Royal Rumble they've ever had. They gave Braun Strowman a belt, and we never saw it again.
It's never been seen again.
So, thank you that genius who went through that intrepid reporting to figure that out, or actually probably just guessed, and is probably correct.
We've already had like a, because there was like the greatest wrestler in the world thing, the Shane McMahon one over there, and then there was the thing.
The world's greatest tag team.
The Good Brothers. And then, like, I think the year or two later, like, the Undertaker won the whatever version of it.
It's an Elseworlds show that does not matter unless they tell us it matters. And sometimes they do, because we, you know, the Universal Championship changed hands there. So.
Yeah, I mean, so it's just, there was a sheer deflation all over just the timeline. Because. I mean, everybody was like, oh, women's mid-card title, yeah. And I saw people saying that, and I was just thinking, like, that's not what this is. I don't know what this is going to be, but it's not going to be that. Like, I just had that feeling, like, this is not going to be that. Then once you start talking about, you know, Saudi Arabia, blah, 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 I was like, this is going to be
a Saudi-specific title.
This is going to be a Happy Meal prize belt.
Jesus.
Have we seen the belts yet?
They displayed
the men's one.
Oh, okay. I didn't see any of the press conference.
It looks almost the same as the belt that Braun won for the greatest Royal
Rumble. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
It's gaudy. It's large. It's really large. Like, you could wear this as a belt and a chest plate.
Like
me, it would probably touch my chin and my belly button all at the same time.
Hang on. I'm going to look at this thing.
Yeah, look this thing up. While we're talking women's mid-card championships, I do want to throw a shout out here to Candice LeRae for winning the inaugural women's speed championship in a victory against Io Sky. And that was significant because in the story, you know, Candice has wrestled Io everywhere twice and never beaten her, got a clear, clean, decisive win over Io Sky on the app formerly known as Twitter in the speed women's championship finals. And kudos to Candice LeRae. I think I've been waiting anxiously for them to do something, anything with this woman since she's been on the main roster, and she's been jobber to the stars for the last year. So for her to win her first championship in WWE, at least on the main roster, is pretty friggin' awesome. And I think she's a great person to represent that brand, at least for their inaugural champion.
There's nothing wrong with Candice LeRae. Anytime you ask Candice LeRae to do a job, and I don't mean it like that,
she gets it done.
You're gonna get the A-plus effort. So, yeah, I know it's a stupid Facebook championship or whatever, but still, hey, she's getting some shine. So
people are watching that. They're
all in on Mrs. Wrestling and the wrestling family.
It's not just a Twitter. It is just a Twitter championship, but they're being paid boatloads of money to do this, and people are watching it. You know, it's important enough. And
I do think it's stupid that you can't carry it around during the shows. That's
exceedingly
stupid to me.
It is X-specific. But we need to – this goes back to a conversation that we were having prior to the show. We can't treat these things as trivial, especially when it comes to the women. You know, when the women are getting something, make a big deal out of it and fucking watch it. You know, fucking make it important. Because that's the only way that women are ever going to get a bigger slice of the pie is if we stop treating the little things that they're doing and the less popular women like they're trivial. And I think this is one of those things where we need to take it serious. We need to get behind it. We need to watch it. We need to support it.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal. The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Yeah, eventually it's always on the fans. So, sorry, Rob, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. And look, this is the kind of thing, these are 3-minute matches. And look, I'm going to confess, I have not watched any of the speed stuff because I always forget to do it. Okay. And I didn't watch any of the men's speed stuff either. So I will make that confession. But
some of it's really good, Rob.
But I will say if you have been thinking about watching it and have been telling yourself, eh, whatever, try it.
It's okay. 3 minutes of your day on Wednesday. Literally, anybody can I can squeeze it into my schedule. You know,
have they had draws yet?
What?
Have they had draws yet?
Like time limit draws? They had some on the men's side. Because
they should. It's 3 minutes. Like we're not going to score a pinfall or submission in 3 minutes every single time, guys.
Right.
That's insane.
Yeah. So.
Let's have everybody like Brock Lesnar.
We ready for the main event here?
Yeah, so the current guy who's holding the WWE Championship teamed up with the reigning, defending, ultimate tribal chief, the only tribal chief, the original tribal chief, to take on the pretender-in-chief, Solo Sikoa, and his very scary Samoan werewolf, Jacob Fatu. I will not make any jokes or snide comments about Jacob Fatu. So, yeah, well, this, you know, this is why we're all here, aside from, you know, Punk and Drew. So this, and I think the match delivered. The ending was absolutely perfect with Jimmy coming back like that. And I think my two cents on the end with, you know, Cody's getting the beat down, Roman and Jimmy are halfway up the ramp, and Jimmy turns to him and says, "Hey, you know, you gave me your word," and they go for the save. I think it's important to note, everyone, you know, Michael Cole said Jimmy, you know, getting Roman to do the right thing, or making Roman do the right thing. That's not what happened. And I think it was very, very cool for, one, the shout-out when Jimmy showed up again and Roman was kind of like, what just happened, and was looking at Jimmy. They've subtitled it and read their lips, or you can kind of hear them. And Roman looks at Jimmy and goes, "That was you? You called the play?" And yeah, hearkening back to, you know, when Jimmy was calling the play for himself and, you know, making an ass of himself. So that was great. But then going back to that moment where Roman and Jimmy make the save, Jimmy just turns to him and says, "You gave him your word." And Roman turns back to him and says, "That was a one-time thing." And then, like, he gestures back to, like, it was for the match, and that's it. Like, that was the implication. The match is over. And then Jimmy just says, "You're the OTC. I'm with you. What do you say?" And there's a moment and there's a beat where Roman lets it breathe, and then Roman's entire body doesn't move, but his hand just slaps Jimmy, and Jimmy takes off like a gun. And they go, and I think he does say, like, "Let's go," or something like that. But so Roman, so I will say that Jimmy was being a good little Jiminy Cricket and was reminding Roman, you know, "Hey, it ain't like that anymore. You're the OTC. You're a good guy now. You know, you gave your word," you know, reminding Roman. And I thought that was a cool little moment. So wanted to get that out of the way. The spear that Roman gave Solo at the end was hellacious. Roman, like, twisted in the air after he hit Solo. It was awesome. Rob, what were your thoughts?
Okay, so we got to recognize, look, Roman and Cody had, like, the ultimate dick measuring contest for their ring.
They did. That was awesome. Roman's was cooler.
I mean, yeah, that was a, everybody whip it out moment there.
I mean, they did it at WrestleMania too, so.
Yeah, but other than that, I mean, yeah, I thought it was a good match. I'll admit it, you know, I wasn't totally dialed 100% in for the entire match, until they started getting towards the end.
Big fan. Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes.
I gotta admit,
you're not dialed in. Do me a favor, put that one down. You don't deserve it.
Stop it. All right, stop it. Okay, stop. Okay.
No, it was a little slow. It was. I don't know.
Anyhow. All right. Anyhow.
But man, this is picked up.
Yeah, and right, and so I thought that the part with Jimmy was excellent.
Reveal was awesome.
Oh, the reveal was just top notch.
Yeah.
The camera angle, like, sorry guys, like, we can argue about the camera cuts and that bullshit all we want, but as far as them getting those more cinematic camera shots, they had been firing on all cylinders in the last, what, like 3 months, if not longer?
Yeah, and that was one where you absolutely needed to get the angle right.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that was, yeah, man, I love that part of it. And
For me, the funniest part of the whole thing was the very end, where our man Dwayne came out with the gimmick belt.
I hope when him and Roman finally face off, Roman cracks him right between the eyes with that son of a bitch of a belt.
Oh man, yeah, I mean it's just, I'm sorry that. Every time I see him walk out there with that thing, it's just hilarious.
And then Rob posted on Twitter. The story is
true.
Rob posted on Twitter
about
10 minutes later. He's like, I'm going to start carrying around a gimmick belt that says genius right across the front. Man, I popped when I read that.
But man, the lore behind the belt is fucking ridiculous.
Oh, it is.
And that's to me what, like, I can't laugh at it anymore now that I know that. Like, Muhammad Ali's wife gave that belt, had that belt made, and gave that belt to Dwayne Johnson as a gift and as to kind of, as to crown him, you know, as her husband was, the people's champion. Like, that's fucking cooler than almost any wrestling belt you could win. Shit.
It actually is very cool.
Yeah, I have to get in that piece of trivia about that belt because, you know, he does look like a buffoon, but the belt is cool.
But it's the right kind of wrestling ridiculousness.
Well, yeah, exactly.
It, it really is. It's so ostentatious that it works.
Yes.
And that, and also, again, who's going to check him because he's The Rock? And who's going to check him if they know the story? Like, in WWE, in character, who's going to check him if they know the story?
Right.
Nobody. That's WWE Hall of Famer.
Well, I wouldn't dare walk up to Dwayne and tell him he looks ridiculous. I would never. I would not.
No.
I would not do that.
Hell no. I had to make a side note about this match, and I don't know if you guys picked up on it. They have spent the last, 3 months trying to build Jacob Fatu up as this monster that eventually is going to go head-to-head, face-to-face, man-to-man with Roman Reigns. And when the two of them got in the ring and they had that moment, the crowd reaction wasn't there. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but I didn't feel any crowd reaction, not like I was expecting, for what they're hoping Jacob Fatu is going to be.
No, there should have been a buzz in that.
Should have been a bigger buzz, and there was almost no buzz in that arena for that moment. That was one thing I don't know if you guys picked up on that, but
I didn't.
Because I did want to bring that up, and then that was like it was almost shocking to me.
Shocking to me. It was very shocking.
Like it's that sensation in your ear when you're like waiting for a sound that doesn't come. Like, what just happened?
Are you paying attention to what's going on?
Are you watching what's occurring in your ring? What you people might actually get?
Well, I think to that end, like I always say, you have to win something. So,
yeah,
he needs to beat somebody important in a single match. Jacob, it's time. Yeah. If their intention is to have a big match between him and Roman Reigns, which we think that should be their intention, then he's got to move up from being in tag team matches and just interfering for the Tongans or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got to, you know, whether it's, you know, Randy or Sammy or somebody, like he needs to beat somebody important. Mm-hmm.
Definitively.
Yeah. And it's because otherwise he's just, you know, henchman plus right now.
Right.
I mean, as talented as he is, as a wonder, you know, as much of a wonder as he is to watch in the ring.
He's not henchman number one, but he's Bob.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, he's a henchman with a name. So like, okay, he's the coolest one, but and probably the toughest takedown for our hero, but the hero's still definitely going to take him down.
Right. So now, I mean, he's got to go from that. I'm trying to think. Right. Okay. he's got to go from being he right now. He's Admiral Piet, and he's not Darth Vader.
Pretty much.
You know, Admiral Piet was the smartest one of all the officers who didn't get himself choked out. If those are wondering what I'm talking about. But he's got to graduate up to being Darth Vader, which means he's got to kill some people. Not literally, but.
Yeah.
But he's got to, he's got to have his.
Are you really going to miss Katie McDonough that bad?
Yeah. I mean,
you said somebody serious, Jason.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Well, no, I mean, if he actually killed a person, I mean, I'd take him seriously.
But I mean, I think that's where we are now because.
Yeah.
Right now, I think, again, the casual fan just assumes that.
Right. We know. We get it. We understand the moment that was. They don't get it yet.
Yeah, in the bubble, we get it. But outside the bubble, they didn't care.
Yep. Right, because, yeah, exactly. So he's still. He's Bob. Yeah, and so he's got to graduate now. If they have the big intentions for him that we think that they should have, then. He's got to graduate. He's got to beat somebody important in a singles match, and in order for things to take the next step, because otherwise, yeah, I mean the casual fan isn't going to get it. It's like
he's 32 years old. Holy shit!
It's like when Braun, when he was the fourth guy in the Wyatt family, even though he was bigger than all the other guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What finally put him on the map was when he beat Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
Right. So Jacob needs his Braun beating Roman Reigns moment here. Or else he's like Braun was the fourth guy in the Wyatt family.
He can't beat Roman Reigns.
He might have to beat him on the first one.
Or at least, I mean, Well, he needs to beat somebody else. If they do that, he needs to beat somebody else first. I mean, because again, if they just have him wrestle Roman, if he does beat Roman, people are still going to be like, well, what the fuck is this? If he beats Roman, yeah. Right? Like, there has to be a lead up to it.
Yeah. Bob doesn't kill Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all so right. that's just kind of where I think that's the next step they got to take. Really.
Yeah.
So all right. What do we think the meaning of Dwayne coming back was? Because, I think he's coming after Roman and Cody. But
I don't even want to speculate. I want this one to play out. I want them to surprise me.
All right. Rob, do you want to hazard a guess?
He may have just been coming out to observe. There may be some wheels turning.
He also did the 1, 2, 3, and then he did the throat cut thing. So he was not just observing.
Okay. So I guess the question is, well, we all kind of have an idea of which side we think he's going to end up on. So it's just the question is, was this always set in motion in April or, right. or did he just get pissed off recently, in kayfabe? I mean, right. I think that's the real question.
And is he coming to, fix his house?
Whatever this turns out to be, is this a reaction to Roman losing at WrestleMania? Or is this a reaction to Roman coming out to SummerSlam and helping Cody? That's the question to be answered.
Okay.
Because those are two different stories. If he set all this up because he felt Roman was a failure, that's a different story than him just getting pissed off and seeing Roman help Cody, right?
Right. All right. Well, guys, if there's nothing else, I think we can probably move on from Bad Blood.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yep.
All right. Well, we are going to talk about something on the backside of the commercial break. Before we go to commercial, I want to invite you to go over to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. From there, you can look at, browse, peruse, if you will, all the t-shirts that are available from your favorite Chairshot Radio Network podcast, including this one, the Mindless Wrestling Podcast. That's right. We have our own t-shirt up there. Go check that one out. Holiday shopping is just getting started. go pick up a t-shirt, pick one up for yourself, your family, your friends. They'll love a t-shirt. T-shirts always go over nice around the holidays. Pick one up for yourself. Pick one up in soft style. Your body will thank you. The starving artist on this show will thank you. That is prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. We're going to go to commercial break, and when we come back, we are going to continue a conversation that we started last week, and we're going to give it a bit more nuance and a bit more time. This is the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, part of the Chairshot Radio Network, to be found on thechairshot.com.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
And we're back. We want to finish a conversation that we started to have last week about representation in WWE and the criticism that Triple H has taken most recently about the lack of people of color, more specifically black people, on the premium live events. And I'm going to start this whole thing by saying we started to have this conversation last week, and I think it just being a case of too many cooks in the kitchen, we didn't really get to have the discussion the way that I think any of us wanted to. And this is nothing against anybody that was part of the discussion. I just think there were too many mouths trying to voice an opinion on the matter. And a lot of it really didn't come into any cohesive narrative. So I want to start the whole conversation with saying that Triple H at the post-media scrum after Bad Blood was directly asked about representation on the premium live events and in WWE in general. And unfortunately, his answer was the kiss of death for white people in these particular situations was, I don't see in color. And I have my own thoughts on that as somebody who has used that phrase in the past before understanding that that doesn't, as Chris Lee, who was on this show a couple of months ago promoting a documentary, Chris Lee said on the app known as Twitter, he's like, I understand the sentiment behind it, but that doesn't land the way that people think it does. And he's right. And I'll explain, you know, my perspective on it here in a minute, but I am going to kick this over to Rob. We're going to start this conversation off here with the post-media scrum.
Okay. So yeah, that was the worst possible answer. And I will say this, there was a time where that answer was more correct but you know, at a time, you know, when back in the day when they had put no colored people allowed signs up on stuff, then that type of answer was more accepted because it was basic, because the intention was different, right? It was,
right,
you know, if there was a sign saying no colored people allowed, and then the guy who owned the store said, hey man, come on in, whatever. Right. And then, or the guy who was, you know, running the register or said, man, fuck that sign. Come on in. Right. Then saying, I don't see color has a different connotation. Right. But today when we're allowed in the building, okay.
Yeah.
When they don't have signs up like outside of buildings, and you know, it's a different, it's just a different time. And so now it's not, do you see my color? It's okay. You obviously see it. So now what do you want to do now to see it?
And yeah, so Rob, I just want to interject there. Cause when I hear that phrase, I don't see color, I immediately think of the story Cody Rhodes told, where he said that or implicated that to Brandy, and she looked at him and said, well, then you don't see my experience. And that's a very like succinct way to say everything you just said. Like,
and I'll build upon that point a little bit after Rob finishes his thought, because as someone who's used that phrase, I can offer my perspective and my take on that.
Yeah, it was a phrase for a different time. And again, I don't know if it was ever appropriate, but there was a time where it made more sense.
Sure. Well, in the context you laid out, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. But today, it doesn't apply today. And I would just say that, you know, he should know that by now. but apparently he did not. And so, I mean, I'm of a mind to just say, man, stop doing these damn media scrums, because ultimately, you know, something dumb ends up being said. And of course, the most extreme example, we got, you know, what led to Brawl Out, right? I mean,
yeah.
So, I mean, I just personally, I don't think, you know, I think these things, you know, regardless of company, I think these media scrums end up being at best, you know, neutral and at worst detrimental.
Well, because they sit in a weird zone of kayfabe and reality.
Well, like, not only that.
Not everyone knows how to ride that lightning.
Well, and not only that, the journalists, and I'm using air quotes here, are so desperate to prove that they're real journalists, you have to be prepared for the big questions. Tony is going to get asked about the Jericho stuff. Triple H is going to get asked about the Vince stuff, about the representation stuff. Somebody out there is going to try and prove his craft or her craft by asking a tough question. And you should expect this going in, and you should have at least a canned answer prepared if some knucklehead out there goes, well, what about representation? Because, you know, and I shouldn't even say knucklehead, because as journalists, these are questions we should be asking. You know, these are definitely things you want to know. And if this is a legitimate concern, yes, we want to address it. We want an answer. We want to know what's going on. But he just was ill-prepared, and this speaks volumes to the fact that I don't think that there's representation backstage. You know, not somebody back there that can look at him and say, okay, this is how we should answer this, or this is how we feel about this situation. He's going out there and giving you his own answer as to how he feels about it. And in his eyes, when he makes a statement like, I don't see color, objectively, we can look at where he's coming from. We can look at this and say, okay, when he thinks about pushing talent, he's not going, well, I'm going to push the white guy and not the black guys, or, you know, or whatever is going through his head. But the answer in and of itself was not the way to go. And I don't know that there's anybody backstage who can kind of coach these answers along. Does that make sense, Rob?
Yeah. And so, and like, I don't, and, because here's the thing, right? It's now the initial complaint that was made on Twitter was specifically about black male main roster wrestlers on premium live events. So that's a very specific, very narrow focus. And so, and he was asked a question about just diversity as a general term.
Yeah.
So I think, so to that end, I think we kind of lost the plot a little bit there, because if you're asking him about in general terms about diversity, then I'm sure there's plenty of evidence that they're doing fine. Right.
Yeah.
The tricky part is, though, is that within people of color, there are different groups, and you got to juggle them around. Okay. You don't say, okay, black people get 3, Hispanic people get 3, Asian people get 3. No, you don't do that.
Make sure you're always locked out.
Yeah, and it's just, that's the biggest thing. The biggest thing is that you have, somebody has to be mindful of, okay, it's been 2 years. I'm just throwing out a hypothetical, okay? You know, it's been 2.5 years since we had a black U.S. champion or a black singles champion of any kind. It's been 2.5 years. So, hey, we might want to think about doing that, because it's been 2.5 years, right? And that, right? It's not, you know, well, again, it's not where we need one from every group all the time. It's not that. It's making sure that some long amount of time doesn't elapse without having one for each group, actually, you know?
Right. When someone brings that up and then says, oh shit, yeah, you're right. And they go, okay, can we get there in the next 6 months?
Yeah. And so that's, to me, that's what's missing. And I think because again, I've been on some diversity boards in some different places. And basically what it always comes down to is somebody who's already in the room looks at the picture on the wall or looks at the list of people who've gotten such whatever over the last, however many years and says, hey, we don't have enough of this group. And, and that's really what it comes down to. Like,
yeah,
somebody has to be looking at the list of names, looking at the pictures and saying, hey, we don't have enough. We haven't had enough from this group. We don't have enough from this group. And we need to get some more people from this group, whatever that group is. In this case, we're talking about black men in this case, but, the group could be, any ethnicity. The group could, we could be talking about women. We could be talking about LGBT folks. It doesn't, right? Basically, there has to be somebody paying enough attention to realize that, hey, we haven't served this particular group properly in 2 years or 3 years or whatever, right? And to me, I think that's likely what is missing. And that's one of those things, honestly, a lot of places, not just wrestling companies and companies in general, a lot of places just completely miss that until somebody walks in and looks around and says, hey man, what the fuck?
Yeah, somebody has to point it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if I've got a few thoughts, if I can.
Good. Yeah. I don't mean to hold up all the time.
No, it's okay, because this is important. In terms of the statement that he made, I don't see color. I have been guilty of using that in the past. And the way that I have always looked at it when I used to look at it that way was I don't compartmentalize my black friends. Like, I don't say, okay, these are my black friends, these are my Spanish friends, these are my white friends. I don't compartmentalize like that. I just have friends. And so in my head back then, when I was, choosing to become friends with somebody, the thought was, this guy's black. Do I want to be friends with him? This girl's this or whatever. It was like, okay, do I vibe with this person? Do I get along? And for the longest time in my head, I don't see color. I see people was the way I looked at it. And without understanding, like Brandi Rhodes told Cody, you don't see it from my perspective. And this comes back to, and I'm using this podcast as my point here. Jason and I can be allies. We can sympathize. We can understand, but we can never see what Rob has seen through Rob's eyes in the world, in employment, in life, in whatever. And, that's where that phrase falls apart. And that's where it has become so archaic. And when I look at the grander picture, when I invited Rob onto this podcast, it was because Rob and I, talked a few times. I thought he was a great guy. We had great chemistry. The one time we got together on YouTube, we had a lot of things in common. And I never looked at it like, hey, he's a black guy, I should get him on my show. I was like, I looked at him like, okay, Rob's a great guy. He's got a great knowledge of this thing that I want to talk about, and we get along well. Come on in and talk with me about it. Now, I'm not obtuse. I'm very well aware of how important his voice is on this show for representation. But that was never my motivating factor for bringing him in. That being said, I'm very aware of how important it is for people like him, Ray Cash, when Brooklyn Ike is on here, when we had Nicole on here as a black woman, that's all important to me. But when I look at the phrase, I don't see color, that's what I think of when I would use it, when I did. As far as like the use of black talent on black male talent, we'll kind of break it down as it was originally intended. Triple H is still learning his roster, and he's still got a couple of holdovers. Like we talked last week about how Bobby Lashley, Shelton Benjamin, and MVP are all gone. And those were three very, very influential, very important black men in the WWE fold. And I look at it this way. These were all Vince's guys, like at least on paper and at least at face value, MVP was a Vince guy. Bobby Lashley was a Vince guy. Triple H as a booker is now looking at his guys. And he is going to look at Bobby Lashley or MVP or Shelton Benjamin very differently and go, okay, I personally don't know what to do with these guys. And whereas Vince looks at things very differently, and this is part of the transition that we've got to get used to, Triple H has an entire roster of excellent black male wrestlers at his disposal that I think and I hope he is going to use adequately and appropriately and properly in the near future. We've got Obafemi, we've got Trick Williams, we've got Carmelo Hayes, we've got Javon Evans.
Yes.
Yep.
Javon Evans, who just got a huge rub from Randy Orton this week. So then we've got the New Day. And I take the New Day as my example because they are holdovers from Vince. But this is a couple of guys who you can heat the New Day back up in like 2 weeks. You know, they're still merch sellers. They still get a good crowd reaction. And I think there's a solid story to be told with Xavier Woods if they can complete the trifecta between Woods, Kofi, and Big E in terms of all of them winning the World Heavyweight Championship. So Triple H has a lot of weapons at his disposal to kind of beat this allegation, but it's up to him to determine which guys he wants to use. And I don't think he looks at this from the perspective of like, okay, because the implication is that there's a racist motive behind it. And I just don't believe that's the case. I believe, granted, we're 2 years into the Triple H run creatively. I think he's still figuring this roster out. Some of his major storylines were held over from Vince. Finishing Cody's story was held over from Vince. That took a year. The Judgment Day stuff is held over from Vince. You know, there's a lot of things that he had to finish up. And as he looks at the landscape of his roster, he's got to start figuring out where to fill these pieces in. And he's trying to get people more equal opportunity across the board. And with a roster of what, 200 between all three brands?
Yeah.
There's a lot of moving parts. So
I agree.
He's not going to be a bully or a goon as he has been on SmackDown for much longer, I hope. So, yeah, things are percolating.
You were going to say, Rob?
Oh, no, I guess, well, the thing is, okay, so I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I guess to me, again, it comes back to sometimes, like, he can have his ideas and his plans and what he wants to sketch out over 6 months or over a year. But again, it takes somebody needs to be in the room and say, okay, man, I know you got everything figured out for the next year, but we need to do something about this. And so we need to rewrite something here, or we need to something.
It wouldn't be a Herculean task to, again, ask, can we get here in the next 6 months?
And actually, my suggestion is, like, you have a tag team on SmackDown that has been spinning their wheels for like almost 3 years now. And given the way you book the tag team division, it doesn't look like they're going to be winning those belts anytime soon. And people have been clamoring for at least one member of that team to have a singles run anyway. And a lot of us think that both guys could have a good singles run.
I was going to say, the other guy is getting severely underrated as to what he could do on a singles run, in my opinion.
And you're not doing anything meaningful with them right now as it is.
Let the beautiful butterfly, like, let the Street Profits go. Let them, you know, fly, spread their wings and see what we got.
And that's an immediate, if you're looking for an immediate solution, that's something you can do immediately, right? Because those guys are both ready to do a singles run if, you know, and they're not doing anything out right. I mean, all they do is like every 45 days, they get a title match and they lose.
Yeah.
Every month or two, you know, they win some contender thing. And they get a title match and they don't win. And it's been kind of like that for the last 2 years with them. So it's not like you're not holding up anything with them for something else, right? So if you want to address this, if you want a quick, you know, thing you can do to address the situation, it's right there. And so for me, it's just, to me, it's always a matter of, okay, what do you have to work with right now? And if you're not working with them in a way that, you know, could benefit everybody, why aren't you doing it? Because I think, again, you got two guys right there who are ready to do singles runs, and you're not doing anything meaningful with them as a tag team right now. Okay. Like, look, if they were tag team champions, then fine, you know, okay, but they're not. And again, it doesn't look like they're going to be anytime soon, and they haven't been for over 2 years now. And so if you want an immediate, and so to me, that's, I mean, cause we've talked before about how sometimes Triple H is too wed to the long drawn out or long term storytelling or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, guys like the Street Profits kind of get lost in that shuffle. Cause, well, Sami Zayn even said that, like, it's great if you're in the plans, but if you're not in the plans, you know, yeah, and he's describing the difference between Triple H and Vince. Triple H is much more organized and much, you know, again, thinks things out further. And that has its benefits. And, you know, the chaotic Vince approach, this was coming from Sammy, like the chaotic Vince approach, the benefit was that one day he might come to you and tell you you're winning the world title tonight.
Yeah. You know,
right. And there, you know, there are pros and cons of both, right? But in this case, I guess my issue is that you got some guys right there that you could be doing that are ready to have you do something with, and you could be doing something with them. And if you were doing something with them, nobody would be asking you this question right now.
Well, let's expand that topic just a little bit more. This is where you run into a problem with the 5-match premium live events. I take Bad Blood from this weekend. Drew and Punk went, what, 33 minutes?
Yeah.
There were 5 matches. If you shave 2 minutes, just 2 minutes off each match, you have allowed 10 minutes for another match. That's a hell of a long match. And you can find 2 people to plug into that spot. And I think that's part of, you know, Triple H's game plan is less matches with more focus on the stories going into those matches. Whereas if you could find time to create another angle, you could easily slot a 6th match into these 5 match cards.
And that, and, or just, you know, you can unveil the Burger King belt on TV.
Yeah, that didn't need to happen at Bad Blood.
Okay.
Like that was, and then, nothing against Gunther. I thought the segment with him and Bill Goldberg was excellent. But was it necessary for Bad Blood? No. That's a whole match you could have had.
Yeah. And so it's just, there are things, just look, I mean, you know, there are things we think we could be done differently. And, you know, and look, people, you know, some people are going to have questions until the questions get answered. I don't doubt for 1 minute that, look, when Oba gets up there, I think he'll be fine. I think when Trick gets up there, he'll be fine. I think both of those two guys, when they get up there, they're going to be on premium live events. Okay.
Yes.
But in the meantime, you know,
you have guys you're not using.
Yeah, again, we got the Street Profits both sitting there. You know, we got the New Day who, you know, they're on TV, but that's it, right? We Omos has been in witness protection, right, for over a year. And so it's just that right now those guys are not getting anything. Those are guys that we see you could be doing something with them. As far as getting them on a premium live event, and it's not happening. So yeah, we feel pretty confident that Trick and Oba will get on those, and we feel pretty confident that Carmelo he was in Money in the Bank this year. We feel pretty confident that he will get there too.
But he's a hair's breadth away from the U.S. title right now.
Yeah. So it's just between now and when those things happen, like you, yeah, it can't just be, okay, wait till next year. Everything will be fine.
It's like you said last week, Rob. You know, hold tight, your steak is cooking. Hold tight, your steak is cooking. It's like, well, y'all want steak now.
Right, because I look around and I see other people eating steaks right now.
Right.
Personally, I like my steak rare, so you could probably give it to me.
I'm with you, buddy. I like a good rare steak.
But, and that's just, so that's, for me, that's kind of what it is. It's all right. Yeah, just to me, you got guys sitting there right now, and your answer can't be, we'll wait till Trick and Oba get here next year. Right? Because we got a whole year till next year.
Yeah. Right? And personally, I love Oba. I love Trick. Right now, those guys should not be leapfrogging the Street Profits.
And then, that's the other concern. I don't rush those guys up to just to placate us. You know, to say, okay, well, these guys are definitely going to be on Premier Live events. We'll just bring them up now so y'all will be quiet.
That's the scuttlebutt, is that Oba may be moving up because he lost to Tony D on Tuesday.
And I hope not, because
he needs another year. I love the guy. He's getting it. Do what you did with Bron Breakker and give him another year.
Yes.
Home cook.
Yeah. I mean, so I hope, you know, don't.
That should be one of our shirts.
Yeah.
Let it cook.
Yeah.
Let him cook.
Because the worst thing you could do is rush either one of those guys up there, and then they're not ready for it, and then they end up not panning out, and then you end up in the same boat, because then those two guys aren't PLE worthy either.
Right? Yeah.
And you don't
remember when Apollo Crews first came up?
Yeah.
And they did nothing with him.
You want to have that circus again? Be my guest. But I think it was very unfair to Apollo Crews.
Yeah, because they brought him up super early, and I was surprised. I was like, damn, like that's kind of quick.
And he just appeared. Appeared on the main roster. Like, all of a sudden, Apollo Crews was there.
And
was that long ago enough? It might have been the old man like, I want him.
Yeah, I mean, but it was too fast. And I think his growth got stunted. And so we don't want that. But yeah, I mean, somebody in the room who will stand up and say, hey, you know, we need to do something about this. And just like, look, they need somebody in the room to stand up and say, hey, we need to write some story good enough for the women's division that we can put another one of their matches in the main event on a premium live event.
Yeah.
Because right now, I mean, all they got was, well, they were in Rhea's hometown. So, you know, in February, right? I mean, if they'd run that show in Chicago, then her and I probably would not have made a minute. Okay.
Right.
No.
So, you know, because look, I mean, you can sit down and look, I'm sure, look, him and all the, whoever's the creative people are, they're mapping everything out and everything. And, you know, everything looks fine to them. And things are working fine, right? I mean, as far as business and everything. So it's very easy to just say, hey, you know, we're rocking and rolling here and everything is succeeding. So we're doing okay, you know,
right.
And it's easy to just say, okay, well, you know, again, everything is succeeding. We're setting all these records for money and gates and all of this stuff. So what we're doing is working. And so we don't need to worry about, you know, anything else or basically the stuff we're coming up with is working.
So right.
We're good. And, you know, you need somebody in the room to just say, hey, guys, okay, we need to address this. We need to address that. We need to, like, again, with the women's division, we need to come up with a story that can get one of these matches to be a big enough deal to put on the main event of a PLE. Because look, when we did the watch along a few weeks ago, with Charlotte and Sasha and the cell match, that match was the main event over a universal title match in a cell, and it was a main event over, you know, Roman Reigns and Rusev, which is also in a cell, right? That match had gotten big enough to be chosen main event over those other two matches.
Well, it was also Sasha's hometown.
Yeah.
Yes.
That helps, but the fact that they did it, like, you know, and again, somebody just in the room says, holy shit, it's been like 4 months since the women have main evented Raw, SmackDown, or PLE. Like, hey, let's just do it. Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know? Just somebody in the room.
Yeah, and all so right. It's a matter, yeah, you gotta, that's all it comes down to. Somebody gotta be in the room and say, hey, we need to, you know, what about this? You know, what about, you know, right. And I think that's what's missing.
Yeah. Well, right. hopefully they fix that. Hopefully they address it. And, you know, hopefully we start seeing some changes.
Yeah. And, you know, so, I mean, the material is there to work with, so.
Yeah. All right, guys. I think we've had a great discussion here. I don't have anything else further if we want to get out of here.
No, I'm successfully got out of the discussion without embarrassing myself. So, hey.
I'm not sure I did, but I tried. All right. Oh. Well, I will go around the room here and thank my co-host, starting with Bucky's tag team partner, Jason. Sir, fun show tonight. I'm glad I was able to be here with you guys.
It is. It was a great show. We had a fun time. You know, shout out to my wife, but you know, this airs, you know, she'll be running the Chicago Marathon on Sunday. So I love you, honey. I'm very proud of you.
Best of luck to you, Em. We're proud of you. Yeah. Have fun
and
with
happy
that.
And happy birthday to me. It'll also be my birthday.
Oh, early birthday. All right, Jason. Yeah, happy birthday. And from the Rob the Genius podcast, Mr. Rob, sir, good talk tonight. Thank you.
Yes, always. Look, glad you made it through that safely. And I did want one more note. It is remarkable seeing, just from watching NXT Tuesday, seeing Randy Orton's reaction to Javon Evans messing up the spot and thinking of what that might have been 10 years ago or 15 years ago. Randy Orton going from stupid, stupid, stupid to how he consoled him after that was, I mean.
Incredible growth. And I mentioned that a little bit earlier. He got a hell of a rub for Randy Orton. I like to see that. Like, I saw that. I'm like, you know what? That's what it should be. That's what this should be. This kind of stuff. So. All right, and I am the guy with the award-winning and holy beard, DJ. Again, you've been listening to the Mindless Wrestling Podcast, part of the Chairshot Radio Network. Remember, you can call it pro wrestling. You can call it sports entertainment. You can call it whatever you want, but call it in the ring, and we are out of here until next week.